Wendy, I'm not one. You know me. I'm not a
one to say anything nice about
me. Not. That's not true.
Oh, did you see? I've completely stymied you.
Well, that's not totally true.
Wendy, we just want to let you know your top is on right side out today.
Yeah, today you're dressed
it's gonna be
impeccably.
A bad day. I think I do better inside out.
Since apparently you want us to tell you every day.
Right.
No, you weren't there when I needed you, so screw
so
it
we
now.
We lost our chance. I'm not a gossip. You know, there's every office has an office
you
gossip.
Really
it's
aren't.
Not me. I don't got. I hear stuff all the time. But I just, you know, I let it go. I just like, well, I didn't know that about him or her. I just, but did you notice? And again, I want
Steve
to preface
Steve Bertrand
this by
has a
saying,
beard?
Well, no, Steve does have a beard. We established that yesterday. There's not.
Are
not,
you kidding? I shaved it. You didn't notice?
You are kidding.
Not kidding.
All right.
All right. Behind the scenes on Steve Cochran's show, did you notice some animosity? Because toward the end of the show, he complimented G on a great job. She's new to the show. She's only been on the show for a week and a half.
Sounds great.
So Steve did, you know, what I think a host would do to somebody who's new. Not great job, G, he said. And then Dave and John DeCoste looked to me like they were going to cry. I was sure they were going to cry because even Dave said out loud, hey, during a break, what about us? We're doing our best, too. Steve would have none of it. He wouldn't talk to him.
Yeah, but they've already been here and proved themselves.
No, I know that. I don't want today to be the beginning of the end. what I saw today does not bode well for the future.
Yeah, I'd be worried if he said, good job.
Don't, you know what I mean?
Yeah, because then we'd be like, why?
And can I say what? Something about Dave Ennett? This guy is the consummate professional.
Yeah,
all
but
he
that's
does
a
is,
given. He
all
does
he
his
does
best
is produce.
Every day.
He's the best. Look who just came into the studio. Hi, Dave. How are you?
Well, I just, I felt a little responsible for this. And your feelings, there might have been some animosity.
You sensed, you know what I'm talking about,
I didn't
right?
sense any animosity. Am I missing something?
I did.
Oh, Dave's got that look
Dave,
like you missed
you
it.
You
got
to admit.
Well, it just seemed like there was some praise being handed out to one member of the ensemble.
Right. When in fact, it's a team effort.
It's a team. I always think
there's no I in radio.
No, but there is.
Yeah, there is.
There is? I'm spelling it wrong. Yeah. I've been spelling it incorrectly.
And there's also an M and an E in team.
Yeah.
And there's
so true. So
and
true.
And what, Mary?
That's what I was going to say, the M and the E. Yeah.
Right, mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. You can't do the type of show that Steve does. You need support. You need people. You need you. You need Mary. You need John DeCoste. Or you don't have a show. The show closes down. The circus leaves town. Right.
Well, and a Super Joe and
Super
Vivian.
Joe certainly. Yeah, behind the scenes,
need
in front
everybody.
Of the scenes.
Yeah.
So you think, Dave? This is up to you. Don't have to answer this if you don't want. But to the casual observer, mm-hmm. you gotta say to everybody, "Hey, great show!" Right.
Well, apparently, we were late for a break.
So, is that what it is?
I know it's hard to believe.
Is that what it is?
Yeah. We're out of time. Yeah.
So if that weren't the case, he would have certainly thanked you and Mary, John,
to the rest of the crew.
Yeah,
because I know you guys always do. You
every show
everybody.
When the show's over, we and our staff is smaller.
No, we don't.
We've got Jasmine. You don't say thank you to Jasmine after every show. I do.
Does
I
Bill say it after every show, yeah. Jasmine?
You guys say it before you leave.
Yeah.
Oh. Have you noticed?
Yeah. Boy, I'm nicer than I think I am.
Yeah. Wow. you don't mean it when you say it? You just
no,
say it?
No, I just...
I mean it.
It comes out because I know how to say please and thank you.
Yeah. Sometimes that's what you say at the end of the show. You say please. And I go, why is she saying please? Dave, were you hurt by this? Be honest.
No, I'm okay.
You're all right now.
Been in this business a long time. Worse things than that have happened
sure,
to
of
me.
Course they have.
But
if Steve's not going to say it, let me say it. You did a great job today. You did a great job. You do a great job every day.
Thank you, Bill.
Your money in the bank.
Did you hear the show?
I didn't hear most of it, no. Was it not a good show?
No, it was
Dave is the hardest working guy around here.
Hands down.
I see you on TV. I hear you on the radio. You're calling games.
Yep.
When do you sleep? When do you have fun?
Oh, I have fun
while
when
you're
I
doing,
sleep.
Oh.
Yeah. That sounded odd, but I believe you.
I'm sure
that means something. Yeah, that's probably true. Wow.
Let me think about that.
I was just telling a friend of mine, I was telling a guy that I play tennis with, that to me, when you're calling a game, it just feels right. When I'm driving and I'm hearing you call a Northwestern game, you're so good at it, it's so effortless to you, that it just feels, even on a game that I'm not invested in, when you're calling the game, I'm like, I got to listen to this game.
Well,
you're that
you.
Good. You're just that
well,
good.
I appreciate that.
I mean
you
it.
Guys are the best.
Thank you.
Aww.
And so is Jasmine.
Look
well,
at that.
And so is Mary.
This is the
Bertrand.
This is the kind of thing Steve should have done. Right?
Yes.
Absolutely.
Okay, you
so
may
everyone
not.
There, did you notice was first name?
Except oh, Bertrand.
Oh.
It's
well,
just fun to say Bertrand.
A lot of Steves.
Yeah,
because you're distinguished now.
Yes, that's true too. And there are a glut of Steves.
Yes.
Yeah.
You may not be a gossip, but you are a fire starter.
I'm a firefighter.
Oh, I got that
See,
confused.
We put the fire out.
Right.
All right. Well,
thank you, Dave. That's exactly true. There's a thin line between being a fire starter and a fire
Actually,
fighter.
Actually, he's one of those arsonists who comes back to the fire to put it out.
Yeah. All right. I'm with you, Steve
yeah.
Bertrand.
Yeah.
I'll give you both names.
Billy Kerosene. That's what they call me. That's my nickname in jail, Billy Kerosene. So, Dave,
you're not safe in jail.
Thank you. No, I'm not safe in jail. Dave, thank you for doing what you do every day. And if Steve's not going to say it, I'm going to say it. You're the best of the best.
Well, thanks.
All right,
I appreciate the kind words.
All right,
you are great.
Thank you, Mary.
Are we finished now?
Thank you very much.
No, I'm
nowhere.
Upset.
No, Mary's upset.
Oh, God.
Mary also best of the best.
Kidding.
In a tie for best of the best, it's Dave and Mary and John and
thanks.
Certainly Super
Thank
Joe.
Thank you,
Dave,
everyone.
God bless us all, everyone.
Yes.
All right, we'll take a break. Thanks, Dave. We'll take a break and then more show. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
I get a little anxious when you say back to school because
yeah,
as a parent knows, when school gets back into session, it's more pressure on everyone.
Sure it is.
Back to school. I've seen a lot of people on Facebook whose kids already started.
Yeah.
How does that happen?
I know.
My kids go back on Monday and,
in the middle of August.
You know, this is super weird. I know that when we were in school, we've talked about this. We went back to school after Labor Day.
The day after always, every year.
And we still got out like the first week of June.
Correct.
Okay. Now the kids go back. 2-3 weeks before
mm-hmm.
Labor Day, and they get out the first week of June.
Yeah. What happened? Why did that switch?
Well, I've heard, and I don't know how factual I am, that, you know, in order to get funding, the school has to be in session a certain number of days,
yeah.
and it's extended.
Yeah.
They work so hard during the school year. I never had to work.
The students or
yeah.
the teachers or both? Both,
the
probably,
students.
Right?
Yeah. Well, both. But, both. I mean, I didn't have hours and hours of homework when I went to school, and
right.
my grades were pretty good.
Right. Was the homework given to you and you just didn't do it for hours and hours, or did the teachers just not give that much homework back then?
I don't recall there ever being that much homework.
By high school, there was, but not in grade
not
school.
Not hours worth.
No?
With your girls, definitely. With Michael, definitely.
Yeah.
Dylan, it's a little less now. He's
yeah.
going to be a junior in high school. And I have read a lot of things where they're going to maybe reduce the homework amounts.
Mm-hmm.
Listen, if you get 4 math questions, let's even go a little larger than that. If you get 10 math questions and you get them all right,
mm-hmm.
why do you need to do 30? You either get it or you don't.
Yeah. That's a tough call because That is in regards to how much new material is being processed through the questions. If what you're learning does need more questions, I can understand it. But then the time element of solving those math problems, you know, you could be looking at a couple of hours, I guess, right?
I had heard you talk about your daughter Reese, who had like 5 hours of homework.
There were times where they were in the 4 to 5 hour range, which is really a lot of time out of school.
We had it, so I don't ever remember doing 5 hours worth of homework. Ever.
There were times
maybe
toward the end of the year, if you'd have term papers, then maybe.
Yeah, a term paper's different.
Right? Yeah.
That's one class. Usually your English class has a lot of writing, but the other stuff, it just frustrates me. And I was reading in the Chicago Tribune yesterday, Heidi Stevens, I love her articles. She's a parent. And it's called Why It's Mid-August and My Son's Summer Homework Packet is Still Sitting Untouched. Her son had a packet. I believe he's in third grade. We should try and get her on, see
oh,
if
sure.
she's available.
Are you serious? Because I'm looking at her right now.
Oh, wow.
No, I mean, she's 10 feet from me. Do you want her to walk in the studio?
Oh, yeah.
Sure.
Send her in.
Okay.
Thanks,
I'll
Steve.
I am just...
Can Steve do that with any guest we want?
Keanu Reeves.
Steve has this ability to just conjure whoever we talk about. Steve can make materialize. I don't know how he does it.
I love Heidi Stevens. I love her articles, and I believe we'll talk to her about it. Her son's going into third grade. There is a summer packet.
So this is what teachers will give you as 1 year is ending, as the season is ending, right? They give you this packet, and you have to work on it throughout your summer vacation.
Yes.
Heidi Stevens now entering the studio.
That
Hi,
is
Heidi.
So weird. I just mentioned. I know, that's really wild.
Am I talking into the right thing?
Yes, yeah, you are.
I was literally walking by in the hallway.
Wow.
And you heard your name.
Like, they're talking about you.
All right. I read your article. I was out last night, and I was talking to it with my friend Nancy. I said, this is crazy. Did you read Heidi Stevens' article in the Chicago Tribune? Because a summer packet, your son's in third grade?
He is going into fifth.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh,
okay.
That's okay. Yeah. So that was his, he got it at the end of fourth.
Okay. I have high schoolers who had summer reading. I have Dear Evan Hansen, which is a cool and great book sitting on the dining room table, which my son Dylan has not picked up yet, and school starts Monday. And I didn't push him because you explained summer is a time to learn something other than schoolwork.
Right.
They have enough homework.
Exactly. The stuff that you don't ever have enough time to do during the school year because you're like, okay, we can do that for 10 minutes and then we got to get home. You got that project due tomorrow, you
right.
know, or like it's bedtime. You got to get up at
right.
7 and start the day. And in the summer, the whole pace changes, right?
Yep.
You're like, yeah, go ahead and slide into second for the 400th time. We have nowhere to be. You got no homework. And now you have homework? You're kidding me.
It's so you're not. See, I feel bad as a parent not like, you know, nagging Dylan. Read your book. Read your summer reading. My older son, Michael, I don't think he ever finished the book over the summer either. It's summer. You need time to reboot because the school year is so difficult.
I totally agree. And I think there are kids who like that stuff, who sign on for summer classes and summer projects and,
sure.
and want to be challenged in that way. And I think there are kids who don't. And I think what the risk in doing this to the kids who don't is that they start to resent the whole concept of learning. The whole idea of school
right.
feels like this stupid burden that they never get away from. Instead of like, you know, it's kind of exciting to learn new stuff. Like, yeah, I kind of like school.
But Heidi, and I do agree with you. I think summer vacation is your time. Those are your 2 or 3 months to be your time. But what happens to the student when he or she goes back to school and the teacher says, now, as we pointed out at the end of last year, everyone had to read this book or do this packet, and your child goes, I didn't do it. What happens to them?
I know. That's why I'm in such a bind about it, because I don't want him to start the year behind
sure.
the eight ball, behind his peers or with his teachers having a bad opinion of them.
That's right. what I worry about.
So it's right. really a tricky spot for a parent. I am making him do the summer reading. They
you
have
are?
To read Bud Not Buddy, and we're reading it together, and it's a great book. And I have no problem with teachers assigning a book over the summer. I actually think that's great. The 20-page front and back packet
that's
of
ridiculous
math and evidence Mm-mm. evaluation and sequencing that I have a problem with, but I don't really know what I'm going to do. I think I probably am going to start, you know, school starts September 3rd. I think I am going to sit down with him and like have him start doing some of it, even if we don't finish the whole thing, because I don't want him to be the kid who goes in on the first day and is like, I didn't do it, and then his teachers don't like him
right.
or he's lost
right.
or, you know, I mean, I have a philosophical opposition to it, but I also don't want to put my kid in a bad
right.
spot because of my philosophical opposition. You know what I mean?
Well, I think we should put a plea out there to educators. No summer homework.
Thank you.
Because you don't want him to start behind, but everyone else allegedly is going to start with a new year of math or a new year of something where the teachers teach you.
Right.
What you already learned, I'm sorry, things like math, you don't forget that.
You
either know how
well,
to do long division
it,
or
goal is
lattice
to,
work.
Right. No, you don't forget it, but they're trying to teach you new things
right.
in math, right?
Yeah.
They're trying to open you up to new horizons.
That's fine, but then teach it when school goes back into session.
Yeah, right.
Summer is
I'd
for
okay
summer.
With
you were Captain Summer. How could you be
right.
opposed
no,
to
I,
this?
I hate the idea. Even a reading list.
Yeah,
and I'm a
I
reader.
Yeah.
I read, but I don't think your school should say, hey, you're off for 3 months, but not really. You still
yeah.
have to read this.
I know. I feel both of you. I have mixed emotions about it, but my dominant emotion is like, I'm mad.
Yeah, right.
I agree.
Right.
Yeah.
Thank you for doing this on such short notice.
You're welcome. Thanks
that worked
for talking
out very,
about it.
Nicely.
I love your column. And
yeah.
I was telling 3 people about it yesterday, and everybody agreed with you. Summer is for summer.
Good. Thank
yep.
you.
That's Heidi
I like
Stevens.
Your friends.
Oh.
tell your friends
Heidi.
I like them.
Read Heidi in the Chicago Tribune and then tell 3 friends about it. And I'll tell 3 friends and they'll tell 3 friends.
And so on and so on.
We'll take a break and then a lot more show. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. You're going to do a good deed, huh?
I'm going to try.
Tell me that you've got everything you want, and your bird can sing, but you don't get me.
And your bird can sing. Your bird can sing if you have your bird. It's Bill Leff, it's Wendy Snyder, and a former co-worker of ours, Ed Glab. Ed, you were an engineer at WLS Radio for 43 years. Am I correct in that?
That's close enough. Yes.
And long enough, probably.
And if there was a Radio Engineers Hall of Fame, Ed, you'd be first ballot. You know that.
Well, thank you, Bill.
You're welcome.
I appreciate that.
All right.
I'm surprised we're not getting knocked off the air now because the engineers here are going to be upset about that comment.
Well, many of them would also be first ballot Hall of Fame.
All right, good. Ed, I got a Facebook message from you, and it broke my heart. You have lost Chicken. Explain.
Chicken is our cockatiel. He has been with us for 10 years. My wife found him out on the driveway one morning. He apparently got out of somebody else's house and was soaking wet in the rain. So we know he's a runner, so we've always been very careful never to do anything that would let him out. However, on Wednesday, Lindsay and I had been out for a walk, and I do these power walks, so we came back in, and then I was going to go out and do more walking. And we had a couple things to do for a minute, and our little Chickie is such a people-loving person that he always wants to be out of his cage. Well, we call it his apartment because cage is so confining.
Mm-hmm.
But so we let him out just for a couple of minutes, and then I started to go out to continue my walk. And I go out through the garage all the time, so it's kind of like an airlock. We have to just to double check that we don't let Chicken out.
Right.
And I had him on my shoulder. I'd forgotten he was on my shoulder. Went into the garage, hit the button to open the garage door, and the garage door is about halfway up, and I realize suddenly that he's on my shoulder, and just then he's off like a shot, and I go out trying to catch him, and he goes flying over the house, the roof of the house, and he was gone.
And this was a week ago today.
Right.
You have put out, 500 flyers? You've taken an ad out in the Daily Herald. You've been on Craigslist. No,
yes.
No nibbles,
no response,
huh?
Yet, huh?
Well, we've gotten a lot of calls from people. In fact, the thing we got the most response on was on Facebook. There is a group. This is in Elk Grove Village, by the way. There is a group on Facebook that's called We Live and Love in Elk Grove, too. And went on there and made a post, and we got a lot of response, both online and on the phone. So, still, we've gotten some tips, but haven't found him.
No.
I am heartbroken.
On Saturday night, we got a call from someone who lives about 2 blocks from us, and they said they had our bird. And so, you know, we were excited and headed out. We thought, well, let's not get our hopes up. It might not be him. Well, to make the long story short, it turned out it was a little budgie, an all-yellow bird.
Oh.
And they thought it was ours, but mm-hmm. they were wrong. And luckily, the people who did own that bird were only a few houses down, and they got him back.
Oh, so they were reunited with their bird, but we need to find Chicken. You mentioned you're in Elk Grove Village, but now how far can a bird fly? How far should people be looking for him or
well,
her?
We have been told it's a him.
Okay.
He's a little guy. We've been told that they can fly as much as a mile and a half a day. Now, he might be still in the area. I mean, it's hard to say. He could be 5-10 miles away, or it could be right around the house.
Ed, do cockatiels have the ability? Some birds have like this homing mechanism where they kind of know where they started out from. Do cockatiels have that or not?
It would be nice to think they do, but no, they don't.
They're not
like pigeons.
Oh.
And we have a neighbor across the street who lost her cockatiel about a year ago and never came back.
Maybe they're together. They've flown to Hawaii and they're having a good time.
Yes. Could be.
We like to think he's out there having the time of his life, flying free, and I hope that's what's going on, or else somebody else took him in, and they're going to give him a good home.
Yeah.
Well, that's why we're getting the word out there in case someone has found this exotic bird, a cockatiel. He's white, but he has some colors on his head, correct?
Right. His head is almost totally white. He's got just a little bit of gray around the eyes, and he has these orange patches, which look like cheeks. They're actually the ear patches. Bright orange patches each on his cheeks. And then his body is mostly gray with some white and a tinge of yellow. So he's pretty much got this yellow tinge all over him.
We can direct people to your Facebook page if you want to do that, just because you do have pictures of chicken up there. And we're getting the word out because maybe someone has found them and they'll say, oh, I have your bird, Ed. I sure hope this works out.
Sure. They can go to my Facebook page, which is Edward's Lab. Or I have another Facebook page we've created, which is Chicky Lab, Chicky with an I-E. And there are pictures and a video on both of those web pages, the Facebook pages.
But, Ed, just to look at the bird, you would know it's an exotic bird. It doesn't blend in with the birds you normally see. You can tell this is somebody's pet, correct?
That is true. Most of the wild birds around here mostly are sparrows and robins, things of that nature. They've all got short tails.
Yeah.
The cockatiel has a very long tail. So he's very distinctive, and when he flies, he kind of makes a little whistling sound.
Oh.
A little whistle as his wings, the thing that's confusing about that is the mourning doves, which are around, make the same sound when they fly.
I've actually heard that, yeah. But how tall is Chicken? I mean, you said he has a long tail, but it's bigger than your average bird that's going to be out and about, correct? Like much bigger than a robin?
Right. Well, not much bigger. He's actually about the size of a robin without the tail.
So the long tail is the giveaway.
Right. And one thing that's distinctive about the cockatiel is they have a parrot-type beak. I've been told they're not really members of the parrot family, but they have a parrot-type beak, where the other wild birds all have a sharp beak.
Does it have the mimicking ability that some birds have, where it can say things that it's heard in the past or not?
Yes, he does talk, and he does sing and whistle.
You should have taught him his address so he could just say his address.
Wendy, smart, so smart. What are his phrases of choice? What does he usually say, Ed?
His favorite one is Jingle Bird.
Jingle Bird.
He likes the song Jingle Bells, and he'll whistle that.
Yeah.
And then he'll whistle like do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do, and then say, Jingle Bird.
Oh.
Now, you were the original board op for John Records Landecker during the Boogie Check era. Have you taught the bird how to say Boogie Check?
No, I haven't, and we should probably do that. Just one thing I did want to mention.
Yes. Is
we're offering a very generous reward. If somebody brings our chicken back to us in good condition, we will pay them $5,000.
Holy
$5,000.
Moly.
We are serious.
Wow.
We're serious about getting him back.
I know your hearts are broken, you and Lindsay, and I feel really bad, Ed. And that's why we wanted to get you on the air. So if anybody has found a cockatoo or teal.
Cockatoos are the big ones.
Okay.
Cockatoos are big parrot types.
How should people approach it? Should they start whistling jingle bells? And I'm not being funny here, but maybe bring them in?
Actually, that is probably the best way, is to whistle jingle bells and see if he'll come back at you. Normally he loves people. And normally when we have people over, he'll rest on their shoulder and let them scratch his head. Now that he's out, he may not be so friendly. I don't know. He may be on a freedom high or something.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
Then he might come to you.
Edward Glab. He's Ed Glab. What is Chicky's page again? Chicky Glab, C-H-I-C-K-I-E.
Right, Chicky Glab.
Will you please keep us posted? And I hope so much that you find chicken.
I certainly will, and thank you so much. And I hope things go better than they're going on the stock market today.
Yeah. Well, thanks, Ed. Good luck on this.
Thank you, Ed.
Ed Glab.
Bill and Wendy, thank you so much. And we really appreciate
absolutely.
You helping
good
out.
Luck.
I want to cry.
It's tragic. And you heard right, a $5,000 reward, just to put that in perspective, if I'm ever missing, my family has offered an $80 reward. So That's how badly they missed their putt.
I think whoever finds you has to pay them, pay them for you, you to be taken back. I don't know how it works. Well, if you see chicken...
How much of the... I know that when you have a pet and you love... No, it's not a joke. I know when you have a pet and you love it, and it's like a member of your family, but are cockatiels, do they cost in the range of $5,000? They don't, do they?
No, but they... You know, an exotic bird can go... the average cost of a cockatiel can range from $120 to $250 or more. And the startup costs for its cage, food, and equipment can easily reach $300.
Wendy, I just got a text from Alligator Bob. He is on the case.
You know what's funny is he'll probably find he'll the find cockatiel.
I know.
He was unable to find.
He'll have to change his name to Cockatiel Bob next time we see him. That guy's Cockatiel Bob. Why does he look so familiar?
I just hope he's found.
Me too. Ed's the nicest man in the world. His wife is so nice. You hate to see them go through this.
All right. Well,
we're hoping for the best.
It's GLAB, by the way. Somebody wanted us to spell the last
GLAB.
It's on our Facebook page if you go now to his actual link. So yeah.
Okay, so we shared a link on our Facebook page. Oh, God, I hope there's some kind of reunion. You know,
right.
He reached out to me yesterday, and I've been unable to sleep.
Right.
I really have. No, it's really bothering me.
I understand.
It's like if Kona ran... Well, wow. I am so 100% kidding. I love Kona. I know I just act like I don't. Right. I do. We are going to take a quick break, and then we have some calls about missing birds.
Oh, really?
Yes.
All right.
It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder, and we're trying to help people. That's what we do right here on Absolutely. WGN Radio.
Blackbird singing in the dead of night.
Technically, chicken is more of a gray bird, and it's a cockatiel, and it's owned by Ed Glab, former engineer at WLS. We both worked with him, the nicest man there ever
was.
Such
a nice man.
And Ed Glab had his bird Chicken on his shoulder when he walked out in the garage, and Chicken took off. He has called the cage that Chicken was in his apartment
because
the cage sounded too confining. Some listener said, put his apartment outside with the door open, and maybe he'll fly back into it.
That's an interesting idea.
Also, he likes to sing Jingle Bells, so if you do see what could be this bird, whistle Jingle Bells and perhaps he'll come back. Mark, you had a similar situation?
Yeah, actually, we've had a bunch of cockatiels, and we've lost them several times. We've got almost all of them back except one. But the most latest incident was it was just about a month ago. We were in northern Wisconsin, and he flew out the door. And it was about 45 and raining, and we thought he was gone. He flew, like, straight up in the air, because that's what they do is they tend to fly straight up, and then they get lost. They can't figure out where to go. And so we kind of, like, went around that night, and we were kind of, like, whistling in the woods because it was really quiet and didn't get any response back. And so we tried our immediate area, and then, like, the next day we were out looking and kind of decided to go to, like, the next lake over. And overnight, we had posted stuff on social media. There's like a local bar there. We put stuff on their website. And while we're going over to the next lake, we get a call. And sure enough, he had actually, somebody had found him on the next lake over. And so people had seen this just odd-looking bird, because he doesn't look like any other bird that's up there. And he basically started flying and getting closer and closer. And finally just flew over to them and landed on them. They were kind of startled. And so then they started checking around with people that were in their little area there and found out that there had been this posting about the bar, and so sure enough we go over there and it's him.
Wow.
I mean, he was disheveled and he was ravenously eating some cauliflower that they gave him. But yeah, we got him back, so he was
amazing.
The worst of the rare.
I can't believe it.
I hope there's a reunion of sorts. Did your bird sing or do anything?
Oh yeah, he does all kinds of stuff. So he loves to do this on September. So he'll, like, bounce up and down while whistling September. He says, he calls me Mr. Bird, so every time I see him, he says to me, Mr. Bird. That's kind of how I greeted him. He can imitate the pepper mill. He imitates the microwave. So, like, when I go to push the microwave buttons, he does the beeping, exact same sound as the microwave.
Hmm. They should do an America's Got Talent with only birds just for a week.
Check this.
Oh, they're very talented. Yeah, no, some birds are super talented. He's up there. He's a really smart bird.
Someone
so to get him back.
Mark, I hope they have a happy outcome as well. A listener texted us from 630 saying, my little guy sings the baby shark song and sings along, and there's a picture of their bird. And then another 630 says, our bird got out when I was a kid. I looked for him for years and years. We named him Curly, and he'd whistle and do the curly chuckle. Nyah, nyah, nyah.
The curly shuffle?
Yeah, no, the chuckle, that laugh.
That one? Oh, oh, oh.
Nyah, wow. Nyah, nyah.
Very funny.
That is so funny. Yeah. If I had a bird, all it would do would swear.
Yes.
They so do true. That, whatever you're saying, whatever you're doing.
All right. Well, Mark, thank you for the hope.
Flip the Bird. That would be your bird's name.
I love
Thanks,
it.
Mark.
Well, I wish him luck. Where about the area that you lost him?
In Elk Grove Village, that's all he said. I know that's a pretty big area, so I'm not really sure. But it's Chicky Glab, GLAB.com on Facebook. Bill, if I can help in any way,
of course.
I can. Maybe someone's already found him.
We found a bird one time going around with a boombox playing a whistle, and they responded back to that. So that was one way we got it back one time.
Wow. Really? That's crazy that would work.
Yeah,
well, Mark, you make us feel better. Thank you so much for your feelings of encouragement.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for a great show. You guys did
Thank
really
you, Mark.
Good program.
Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Over the years, I've seen two or three birds that you can tell are just not wild birds. They're somebody's pet. But I can't even figure out what I would need to do to snare the bird. How would you catch a bird that's just flying around?
Well, that's what we kind of asked Ed. Like, you know, what do? You whistle jingle bells because he likes that, or jingle bird, as he
but
calls it.
But if you don't know the bird's history, I wouldn't know what song to whistle to bring him over.
That's what I mean. If it's a tamed bird, Ed said maybe he'd come land on your shoulder or arm or something. But I don't know. God, I would love to see that happen to
that
you.
That wouldn't be good for
you. You would not get the reward because you would run away.
I'd just start hitting my shoulder.
Yeah.
I know.
All right, coming up, the stories that matter with Steve Bertrand from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom right here, 720 WGN. Thank you, Steve. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. And look who's here.
It's Dane Neal, Wendy. That's who it is. Hi, Dane.
Our friend, Dane Neal.
Yes. Looky.
Nice to see you.
Looky here.
Those are some of my old dancer enticements back when I needed the money.
Dane, I know what today's topic is, and this couldn't be more timely. You wanted to come on and talk about school lunches, the history of school lunches, and how they've changed over the years.
Well, you think about this. With all the advancements we have, you know, look at what your cell phone can do. We can land on Mars. We got world peace. We've got all those things. You think we would have figured out a way to get over the whole lunch, the school lunch thing, but it hasn't happened. You know, there's still this thing that happens during the day where kids get hungry and then they want to go ahead and eat. And so
dare they?
Right.
Yeah, selfish.
I always love those stories when we think of things that we kind of live and have as part of what it is that we're doing today. And we think, oh, well, it was always this way, and it wasn't. So I've taken the liberty to go back into the history machine and school lunches throughout the ages.
Oh, this will be fun.
Yes. So back in the 1900s, at the turn of the century, usually you'd bring something from home, maybe a morsel of bread in an old handkerchief or something like that. And and a case.
So sad.
Think about it.
I know.
And you'd split it with every kid in your class. You'd have to share that.
There was a lot of communal eating. And I guess the teachers, you know, if they were kind of the good teachers, you knew that your teacher was stepping up when they'd have some sort of like a communal stew that they would administer to the kids. Could you
see
that?
Boy, does that sound good.
Like, well, because there's always, you know, it takes
Is that a shoe in my stew?
It takes a village, you know, and all the kids are different. There's always a couple kids that are kind of, you know, always sniffling and just think you're all eating the
same
food.
But no food allergies, I bet, back then.
I don't think there were.
Well, because kids, everyone, I think, only lived to be about 35.
Yeah, the life expectancy
good point.
Was low.
Right, and if you wouldn't notice an allergy because you're busy
tending
your severed limb from the punch press that you were changing.
You're making me hungry.
Yeah, and so now school lunch kind of started back in the 1910s, and this was sort of in New York, 3 cents. And here's the thing, too, is the foods that they had, there wasn't any marketing in the kind of the food world, and they also just sound, to me, they sound depressing. So it was like pea soup, lentils, rice, and a piece of bread.
That was it.
Yes, right. And then for an extra penny.
Basic Oliver fare.
I mean, even think about it.
Right? Who wants more gruel?
At least it was warm, you guys.
Yeah.
Yeah, rice pudding and then stewed prunes.
For dessert?
If you had an extra penny. Yeah, if you had an extra penny, you want
the deluxe.
Want to go big.
Biggie size it.
I love rice pudding to this day.
Do you?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, sure. And the stewed prunes just never caught on, right?
Sadly.
They need a better lobby group. Then at like Miami, Florida, like parents, here's another thing too. So parents would get together and they would donate the meat and potatoes and then they would make a stew at the school.
Yeah.
But it was all donated from, just think about like the waiver forms you'd need to sign today.
Right.
And that was for all week? Yourself. Like that stew would last all week?
Well, I'm just thinking like you couldn't even, I don't know that you could even do quality control. And like let's say, you know, one family donates, because they're probably donating stuff that they're maybe going to get rid of.
Yeah, I would think.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Tainted meat?
Yeah.
Whoa, ho, ho, ho. Yep.
Tainted meat.
The 20s brought on kind of the advent of the hot lunch.
Wow.
Yeah. So, and then what you had was still things that I think sound boring and kind of depressing, like boiled meat and creamed vegetables with a piece of bread.
Were these in schools or prisons?
Yeah, schools.
Schools?
These are schools. Then after that, home ec started. So they started thinking to themselves, well, these are bad ideas. Let's teach the kids to make the food.
Oh.
And that's what started the first cafeteria.
Yeah.
Is they would teach the, you know.
Really?
Fortunately, because we had sort of kind of gender roles that were more rigid at the time. And so they would teach the girls in home ec. And then they would start the cafeteria.
Well, they had to wait for the invention of the hairnet before they could invent a cafeteria.
I don't think
that came the same year.
Just like just like allergies that may have been rampant but undetected. Same with the
undocumented.
Hair.
Undocumented.
Yeah. Same with the hair. The 30s with the Great Depression. Now, you'd think that that would mean less food or worse food, but actually, that was one of the things that the government could do. So they funneled their money into school lunches.
Oh, did they?
And you saw a lot better nutrition for the kids in the schools during the Depression.
Well, I'm surprised. And a lot more cheese.
Yeah, I bet.
You'd get a brick
I would
of
imagine.
Cheese.
Right?
Well, like butter, beef, pork, you know, some fruit and things like that. In the 50s is when you had a lot more of the, you know, you have lunch boxes coming in.
Right.
You have government programs coming in, $415 million. And then you had a lot of companies coming in and trying to get involved in the
whole. The 50s?
Yep, in the 50s.
See, and the food was served by waitresses on skates.
Mostly.
Because it was the 50s.
With, you know, with catchy music.
Right.
Kind of rebellious tunes playing
in the background. A lot of Bill Haley in the background.
Yep. Now, in the 60s, this is where... Now, this is the kind of thing you always think. So, our kids, like nowadays, when they're having a fun lunch or whatever, it's, they get pizza. What? But the 60s was the first time that they had foods that were once considered ethnic foods.
Oh.
Like pizza and enchilada and the exotic chili con carne.
Oh.
Right,
how global.
You're
Epcot.
It is.
You see kind of the advent of things that we see today. Well, we don't see as much of the peanut butter. We'll get to that because obviously...
The allergies.
Peanut butter is pretty much illegal. But fish sticks with tartar sauce and things like that. And then you had 1966, the Child Nutrition Act, where they had that. Now, I know you guys have talked about it. We brought it up as well in the 70s. The schools were thinking like the fast food chains were really super efficient.
Yes.
So they were bringing in KFC and they were actually bringing in McDonald's. I think
Doing that? Not my school.
Our school, one day, when you were gone and Dane was filling in for you, I told a story about how one day a month we had hot dog day or sometimes hamburger day. And on hamburger day, they would bring in McDonald's because we could see the truck from McDonald's by our side, by the side entrance. But then they would take the McDonald's wrappers off and put them in. Like a tin foil.
Oh, my God.
So, but we all had McDonald's. We knew they were McDonald's. I don't understand why they were masquerading it.
I don't see the point of that
it's
either.
It's crazy.
In fact, I think people would be more excited. At least the kids of the time and probably of today as well. But then after that, after the whole fast food thing, then there's a pendulum. It swings back and then say like, okay, well, nutrition is really bad and everybody's getting unhealthy and things like that. The 80s brought up things like Lunchables that our kids still eat.
That aren't that healthy. Come on.
No,
not
they're
really.
Terrible.
They're just easier for the parents.
Right.
And the kids always want the nacho one, which all it is like super salty chips and a packet of sauce.
Yeah.
But things like chicken nuggets didn't exist before. Chocolate pudding.
Pack was around when I went to
snack
school.
Pack. Yeah.
That was chocolate pudding.
Yeah.
And that was elementary school.
Right.
So that was what?
70s.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It could have been the 80s. You never know, right?
So 60, I don't know that they
65,
had them. In,
60.
Did they serve those in your school or you had to bring your own?
Well, you brought them from home. Our schools didn't have any hot lunch program.
Right.
Junior high, but not elementary school.
Okay.
Ever.
And you saw fruit roll ups, which I remember when those first came out. And you saw those in the 80s, and it was kind of space age. It was like, the technology, how can we do this? It's actually fruit. Capri Suns, you know, your box juices. And and then in the 90s, you saw, you know, more food service companies getting in there, and you saw, like, everything things in a pouch and a bag and and all that kind of stuff.
It became standardized.
Yeah, in the last 20 years or so, people have kind of been veering away, trying to get more healthy alternatives.
Yeah.
You don't see as many, you know, soda machines, you know, and
they're
trying to build in the fruit and some of the healthier stuff. But before, it was just like, well, what can we do to kind of give them food?
Yeah.
Then once they were eating food, it's like, well, what can we do to give them the fastest food that they'll like? And then now we're kind of like...
Well. So instead of a soda machine now, what will a school have there as your beverage options? If there's no... Because we always had your standard, you know, Coke and Fanta and, you know, Mr.
Pibb. In high school, though, right?
In high school, not in grade school.
Yeah, I don't... I think the ones that they have now, and this is already happening, I think, I don't know that there are a lot of soda vending machines in schools now. It's probably juice and maybe water if they've got it. Yeah,
I guess so.
Some healthy options and things like that, you know, but then
Zima?
That's alcohol.
Oh, right.
You got the Zima? In the day, of course, you have, we have Bartles and James in California
coolers. That was standard. Every school had that. All right, we'll take a break and then more lunch discussion with Dane Neal. Stick around. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Up in the morning and out to school.
It's Bill F. and it's Wendy Snyder. And our guest, Dane Neal.
Woo-hoo.
You know, from On the Road with Dane Neal.
Heard
weekends here on WGN Radio.
Right.
We're talking about school lunches because school is coming back or is already back.
It's how do you guys feel about that? You know, there are some people that
sad.
Are like, well, because, I mean, there's a little bit of that. And then there's also like, well, wow, the, because, you know, the whole summer thing, you think of it as a kid is, you know, it's a time to kick back, relax,
sure.
have some fun. But for parents, it's kind of a lot of work. You know, there's a lot of extra stuff or just different stuff to do.
Yeah.
When your kids get older, like I have high school and college, it's easier when they're in school or in the summer because you don't have to worry about when they get up. When school starts, it's like it's back to stress.
It's a grind.
It really is.
Because you got to get up, make lunches.
Mm-hmm.
This is like
you make lunches. You're a good daddy.
Yeah. Well, you got to. Otherwise, I don't know. There's a hotline somewhere.
Can I ask you, Dane? You always see this on TV shows or movies whenever they show a kid's school at lunchtime. There's always a lot of trading of things, of items. I don't remember that happening when I was in school, kids trading lunches. Did that happen much? Well,
I don't know that I had anything worth trading for.
Yeah,
so
me
maybe,
neither.
So
an occasional ho-ho or ding-dong.
That's about it?
Well, then you're living. Yeah. You can keep those close to the vest because you know, people don't want those. But yeah, I've heard that. In fact, I was going to bring that up that there is a lot of that. And I'm trying to think of what are the reasons why there's such a lockdown on the peanut situation because you can't even have a Snickers bar or certainly like
schools won't allow you.
You are not supposed
because
to.
Because so many kids have the allergies,
if for some reason, well, I don't know if so many kids do. You've got to think there's got to be some critical mass, right? Where it's like it isn't just a rare thing John Travolta has running around in a bubble. So
yes.
But I think there's enough kids, and I think that the reactions are serious enough. There's one kid at our kid's school that got in touch with a peanut somehow, right? He certainly didn't eat the peanut, but something he had in it, or maybe he was trading with some of the other kids, and they had to EpiPen him. You know, it was it was a serious deal. So I don't know that that maybe that's the reason because of the trading, but it happens all the time. Yeah, they kind of. Like, our kids will come home with all sorts of different stuff that's, like, half-y. Like, we didn't give you this. And
really?
They just kind of, like, I think, I don't know if they throw everything in the middle and just sort of trade it. Or they've got friends that they just kind of, like, hey, I'll take your thing for this.
Yeah, maybe.
So I don't know. So they're content with the items that they hate that we give them because they know there's some street value.
Oh.
And with the peanut butter thing, when my kids were at junior high and elementary school, they brought peanut butter pretty much every day. And someone said, how dare you do... The school would have informed me if there was someone with some kind of peanut allergy because no one said a word and...
Yeah.
Now, I guess, you know, if you send them with peanut butter, you're the devil.
You're a bad person.
They put you, they've got like a Hurt Locker suit, a couple different sizes, and then they put you in that, and then you're no, this is actually serious, not the suit, is they put you in a segregated, separate room by yourself.
Is that true?
It is absolutely the truth. Yep, you gotta
really.
You've got to go in a separate place where you cannot be a danger to everyone else.
Let's say you're having lunch at your desk and you've got peanut butter throughout the day. New kids come into the classroom for the different classes. Couldn't there still be some sort of a scent or something of the peanuts or some trace of peanut butter?
Yeah, you're describing some of the risks.
That probably happens, right?
Yeah.
And some kids have it so bad that even just in the air, they go into anaphylactic shock, seriously.
Yeah.
And others need to actually ingest it to have issues.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yep. Well, okay. So
peanut butter's not that good anyway, people.
Oh, Wendy.
It's really not.
Where are you getting your peanut butter?
I'd much prefer the Oscar Mayer bologna. Or do you say bologna?
Mm, no, peanut butter's way better. Mm-hmm. Way, way better.
Well, for those things that aren't deadly, Yeah. But people like them, but typically they're not healthy. They're coming up with some new things at the kids or the school nutrition council meeting that they
have. Puffer fish? Is that still okay to have?
It's okay with a little paralysis of the jaw or whatever. You're right. Good. So they've got things like raisins. Raisins have long been, you know, the box, the red box. Sure. It's got the lady on the front with, I think, a big like bowl of raisins, right? And underwhelming. No one's excited about raisins. People turn their nose up at them. So they've decided to make them more exciting. So they've got raisel sours. And I think the thing is combination of crazy flavors. Kids love that stuff. And then make things incredibly sour, right?
Do they sugar it up? Is that what they're doing?
Well, the sugar would be artificial sugar that we won't realize causes cancer for decades, Bill. But it's like orange burst, watermelon shock, and chili limon pineapple.
Jeez.
Yeah. So the raisins, but here's the great thing is they don't taste like raisins. But apparently
not at all.
Well, that's the upside.
Do you remember? I don't know if they still make these, but craisins, which were cranberry raisins. Sure. Do you remember those?
Yeah. Not tart enough for me. If you want,
you want them more tart.
Yeah. Well, because you think nerds or Sour Patch Kids,
right?
You taste those and
immediately
it's like you know, it's like your head explodes.
That's like a sugar blast.
Yeah.
There's so much.
Well, they're
sugar
trying
on
to do something similar. Kids like that kind of flavor profile, but here they are giving them something that's not unhealthy.
Yeah.
But you've got to dress it up with the names because raisin
doesn't sell it.
Raisin doesn't. Right. You got to sell the raisins.
Sorry, California raisins.
Exactly. Well, right. They had a mascot. Those guys have aged out, right?
Yeah.
On the chip side, so instead of potato chips, kids love chips. You've got these dried apple crisps, which I guess are very good.
I've seen those. They're good.
And somewhat.
They're not like a potato chip.
No, but it's somewhere
in
the middle.
It's in that family, right? Gives you a little crunch with your bologna sandwich,
right,
which is still okay.
Yeah.
Then jerky. Jerky's very popular. So people love jerky. Kids love jerky. So they've made it's a minimum sodium. Fits with all of those kind of regulations. Maybe have chicken as the meat instead of the beef, and it's good for the K-12.
Or turkey jerky.
I love saying that, too.
That's fun to say.
Jerky's a really good snack.
Yeah.
It really is.
Well, people like it, right? So it's fun for kids. Plus, they've made it less unhealthy because it's got a lot of sodium. It's real salty. So dried meat and beef jerky, and beef and turkey on the dried meat side. So just, you know, you want your meat, let's just dry it.
Yep.
Right? It makes it easier, I guess.
Sure, more of course.
And then you got the brownies and brookies and things like that, but now they're all made with whole grain.
Brookie being a brownie cookie?
Yes.
Is that what that is?
Yeah, it's like a cookie inside of a brownie.
Oh.
So you think it sounds, look at you, right?
Mm.
You're like, I'm intrigued.
The Jewel has had them for a while. They're
Do they?
Good,
I never had one.
Bill's like, go on. but what Bill doesn't know is that they're whole grain now and less bad for you. Yeah, but that's
probably.
Can
I still get the old kind that are bad for me?
No, you just put that in fine print, and I'm sure it doesn't taste terrible. Now, here's the thing. So, peanut butter, for all those people that like peanut butter or want peanut butter, or think of it really as kind of an easy, as a parent, you know, sandwich to throw together. It's not like a Reuben or something, right?
Right.
It's peanut butter. It's Wow Butter. It's peanut-free spread. So, it gives you all the things, at least I'm guessing.
What are they using instead of peanuts to create that flavor?
Space-age copolymers, Bill. No.
We're not allowed to know?
Well, chickpeas is one of the things that they'll use. Yeah. I'm sure they're able to, like, the food scientists of the world are
Didn't
making...
Didn't you have a chickpea and jelly sandwich yesterday?
No, I can promise you I did not.
Not on purpose, right?
No.
A chickpea or nutter?
But who would taste a chickpea and thinks that it tastes like peanut butter? There's no way.
Well, they flavor it differently.
I think it's the consistency is similar, so if you like that. And then, you know, they could make anything taste like anything.
Really?
Hummus butter.
So tasty.
And then yogurt is big, so yogurt is kind of boring, but then of course you throw some fruit in it. Kids like yogurt, and then what they do is they either freeze it in tubes or you kind of make it into sort of a shake,
right?
So you're still getting your yogurt, and then there's usually an animated character on the side.
Oh, then I'm in. Okay, that was easy.
Then you are certainly
sold, no matter what it is.
Yep. And then smoothies and different like fruit juice boxes, but they've got the blends of the, so instead of apple juice, right,
which
everybody turns down, you've got different flavors. So strawberry lemonade, raspberry watermelon, pineapple, cherry orange, all together.
That sounds good.
Sounds
very good.
Yeah, maybe.
A really quick question or comment, rather, from Cheryl. Cheryl, your kids can get what for their hot lunches now?
Well, actually, it's the district that I teach in. Every Friday, they have a hot lunch, and the kids can order sushi.
Wow.
Things have changed.
Dramatically.
And I'm really surprised, too, because it's an elementary building. So this is first through fourth graders.
Wow.
So, and the kids eat it?
They have sushi. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Voluntarily. It's their choice. But I was also going to say about the peanuts. There are peanut-free tables in the cafeteria. So it's not like the kids are... like completely segregated in another room.
Oh, okay, that's
better.
And
they're really good with the Clorox wipes, like wiping tables down before and after. And yeah, they manage it pretty well. So
all right.
Kids can still bring peanut butter. It's not totally forbidden.
Oh, okay.
And they handle it really carefully, but. Yeah, so it is a far cry from the rectangle pizza I used to get it.
I loved that with the orange cheese.
Yep.
So good.
Thank you, Cheryl.
Thank you. Dane, thank you. Great to see you. That's Dane Neal. You can be heard this weekend at what time?
2 o'clock.
2 o'clock.
Sure.
On the road with Dane Neal. Thanks, Dane.
Yeah, thanks.
Some news is next. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Thank you, Jen.
It's Wendy Snyder. Thanks, Jen.
You busted me. Are you a doodler when you talk to people on the radio?
But that's not just doodling. You're doodling something that's very peculiar. Tell everybody what you're drawing pictures of.
Well, it was just like...
What is it?
Well, you thought they were butts.
It looks like you've drawn a series of butts.
I don't really know.
You're not sure what that is?
I don't really think
about
it.
That's what they're shaped like,
though. There's some teeth up here.
No, that makes it even better. What are your nightmares like?
I don't know. Wow. You really don't doodle?
No.
Oh, my God. If you look through some of all my paper, I doodle all the time.
Yeah, it looks like it, but never with that kind of symbolism.
It was just a bunch of parentheses that I started doing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It's not a butt.
No?
All right. More like a large intestine.
That's far better. You're right. All right, I'm going to ask you a question, and I know I'm putting you on the spot, but there's a reason I'm asking you this. What is the strangest job you've ever had?
This one working with
is
you
it this
did.
One?
No, I have not had that many jobs.
Mm.
I really haven't. I think when I was a kid at the Riverside Swim Club, I lived in Brookfield, but all my friends lived in Riverside, and they worked in the basket room. So I think they got me to work there for a week, but I really wasn't paid.
What did you have to do?
Just when someone would come and put their clothes down in a basket, I would give them the matching key to that basket, and then I would put the basket somewhere else.
And then we'd reclaim it later.
Yeah, but honestly, I wasn't paid. I think they just allowed me to swim at the pool for working there. So it was kind of worth it, but that lasted maybe just like a month or so.
Oh, that's not bad. That's not horrible.
And then I worked at the Gap.
That's not strange.
I mean, I could tell you all my jobs. There really haven't been that.
They're more normal.
Yeah, and then I worked at Charles A. Stevens in customer service, which I totally loved.
Not strange at all.
Could do gift wrapping, and people paid their bills. I really liked it.
Yeah.
And then Brookfield Zoo.
That's not strange at all either.
On the railroad train and motor safari. Then at Loyola Hospital in the kitchen, food service. To this day, one of my favorite jobs.
Really?
It's just you either delivered trays to the patients.
Yeah.
Or I was a conveyor belt. I always thought of the Lucy and Ethel episode with the chocolates.
Yes.
And you just would read what the menu said and you'd put it. I loved working, and that was in high school, and it was above minimum wage back then. And then I started in radio.
Wow. You've been very lucky.
That's it.
Almost everybody has a job. And the reason I bring this up is there's an online website, 24/7, where they have gone state by state. I'm a sucker for these state by state.
I know you do like these.
And they have figured out what the strangest job is in each state.
Mm.
Right? For instance, in California, the strangest job you can have is that of a dog surfing instructor. You know how dogs love to surf, Wendy? You know how your dog is always just thinking about surfing?
Quite honestly, that would be a good job because I bet it pays well and I bet you're not too busy because not many dogs surf.
Right. It says here, as home to the World Dog Surfing Competition, I didn't know that about California.
No, I didn't either.
Although it makes sense, doesn't it?
What doesn't happen there?
Over 3,000 miles of coastline there in California, it's arguably the best state where it makes sense to have a job teaching dogs how to surf. I think that's a sign, if you're ever wondering if you need a sign that you're making too much money, if you're bringing your dog in for surfing lessons, you are making too much money. In Arkansas, the strangest job you can have is that of a log grader.
I give it an A.
You're almost exactly right. Arkansas has one of the nation's largest logging industries, and the state has one of the highest concentrations of log graders and scalers who estimate the value of harvested timber. Could you do that job? How long could you last being a log grader?
Maybe a day.
If that.
I could make it a full day.
Right. You just take your time, right?
Yeah, and you can wear a flannel shirt, which would be cool.
Oh, that's nice. You're right. This one, I don't... Whoever... put this one in, I don't think spent a lot of time thinking about it, because according to this, in Connecticut, the strangest job you could have is telephone operator.
One ringy dingy. This is the party to whom I am speaking.
Telephone operators are much rarer than they were a few decades ago, as automation has rendered many jobs obsolete, but there is still a need to redirect customer calls and assist with billing information for businesses. I guarantee you somewhere in Connecticut, someone has a stranger job than being a telephone operator. I'm positive of that.
A, it's not that strange.
No.
And two, I hate to say this because I sound really stupid.
What?
But if I hit zero right now on a phone, do you still get an operator? What does an operator even do anymore?
I honestly don't know the answer to that.
Okay, so you're in my stupid boat with me?
I'm driving the stupid boat. Honestly, if you hit zero, I would assume an operator is still there, but here's what they would do. What? They would have no idea. Why are you bothering me?
First of all, it would ring forever.
Right.
Because they'd be like, what?
Hello?
What? Yeah.
What do you need?
And everything is automated now.
I
have a side job where I do a lot of messages on hold, so sometimes you hear my voice.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's a lot nicer, I'll tell you.
More
that.
Polite somehow.
Yes.
To hear Wendy in Spanish, press 5.
Hola.
Hola.
But see, honestly, like directory assistance and stuff, I would almost imagine that's automated now.
You would, you'd think, right?
Like press the number
of
the first letter of their last name.
Right.
Press it now.
But sometimes,
followed by the pound key.
In the days before cell phones and what they've become, sometimes you would call the operator and it would take a while for the operator to pick up because they were so busy.
Yes.
It wasn't immediate. You'd have to wait a little while.
You know what I did with the operator? Every New Year's as a kid, I would dial zero. And then when they'd pick it up, I would say, they'd go, directory assistance, may I help you? Or this is the operator, may I help you? And I said, I'm just calling to wish you a happy new year.
Wow.
And they always were super nice to me.
Of course they were. Like, they weren't expecting that.
Oh, thank you so much. But can I get you a number? No.
Just, nope.
The number is the new year, 1999.
Wow. There used to be a service here in Chicago called Sports Phone. And you would call up and they would update it every 5 minutes. And it was whatever sporting events were going on. If it was, baseball season, it'd be baseball scores, basketball season.
I remember that.
Yeah. I used to call that a bunch.
And movie phone. There was that,
too. There was movie phone. Right. And there was a number to call to know what time it was.
Oh, yeah. It was like 976-1212 or something.
At the tone, the time will be 1:17. And 40 seconds.
And then you could set your Mickey Mouse watch to it.
Right.
That was silly. Who?
I don't know.
Really?
I don't know. Well, let's do this. Let's take a break, and then I have more of these. The Illinois strangest job, again, I don't think is correct.
Is it radio?
Yes. We'll get to more of these next. If you'd like to jump in, we're at 312-981-7200. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. What is the strangest job you have ever had? At 24/7, right there online, they have figured out state by state what the most peculiar jobs are that are indigenous to any particular state. In Florida, Wendy, the strangest job in all of Florida. Now, keep in mind, this is Florida we're talking about. So
a jellyfish wrangler?
They found one even stranger than that, but also sea-related. They have in Florida scuba diving pizza delivery men.
What, are they delivering it to submarines?
Not to submarines, but in Key Largo, there is a lounge called Jules Undersea Lounge, located, as I said, in Key Largo, Florida, where you stay underwater, and it's like a motel, but you scuba in and out of the motel, so you can have a pizza delivered to your room by a scuba diving pizza delivery man.
We had it all.
Yeah. Right.
Isn't that a
there
song?
In Key Largo,
yeah. Okay.
Bertie Higgins' best song of all time, Wendy, in my opinion.
Nice J comment.
This is, why would I know that?
That's sick.
Bertie Higgins, I know. In Georgia, now this is a job, seriously, if you're looking for a side job, this is something I think you'd enjoy.
A peanut boiler?
A chicken sexer. Georgia has one of the largest poultry industries in the country. Chicken sexers, or poultry sorters, as they're also called, are needed in an industry to quickly determine whether a newborn chick is a hen or a rooster. You have to do it quickly, though.
How quick?
Very quickly. I don't know. They come down a conveyor belt. You got to quit. You got to make that decision fast.
I'm worried that they're not very nice to the chickens because I imagine they just kind of pick them up and look and then.
Yeah. And who would want that? That's bad for everybody. Nobody wins in that scenario.
And what does gender matter anymore? I guess if you want to find out if you're going to lay an egg or not.
For that purpose, yes. The weirdest job in all of Hawaii, golf ball diver.
Get new ones.
The island well, there's a reason. They go into the reason here. The island state of Hawaii has dozens of golf courses, many near an ocean. Golf balls are bad for the underwater ecosystems, and so people are needed to dive underwater and retrieve the errant golf balls. So that's just them being green and conscious and good for them, I guess. It's a strange job.
Do fish ever try to eat a golf ball, I wonder? Like, you know how they have big, giant fish? Like
I don't
big
know.
Sea bass, Chilean? Well,
maybe.
I'm sure.
You think so, Jen?
Oh, yeah. I bet they pick it up by mistake and think it's a morsel of food.
That can't be good for them. Right.
That's the sound effect of them spitting that out.
You know that that's happening if you hear that noise in Hawaii.
Yeah.
That doesn't sound good. According to this, this is the strangest job in the state of Illinois. A flavorist. Now, I know what this is. It's not that strange to me. It makes perfect sense. Flavorists use chemicals to recreate familiar tastes or totally new ones in food. It's like when Dane was here and we were talking about how do you get something that's peanut butter flavored to taste like peanut butter if there's no peanut butter in it.
So does this mean you're a chemical ingester?
Yeah. Yes.
We talked to a friend of Dane's, remember, who did
something like this? Yeah.
We need to get in contact with that person again because it's really fascinating to me.
Yeah. Yep. In Indiana, the strangest job is airplane repo man. If someone becomes wealthy enough to buy an airplane but fails in financial arrears, they can expect a visit from an airplane repo man. One such guy, Nick Popovich, has appeared on Discovery Channel show Airplane Repo. He has a facility for repossessed planes in Indiana. So you can't make the payments on your airplane, you lose it to this guy, Nick Popovich.
Am I imagining things, or did you have a job doing something similar? Were you a repo guy or something?
Oh.
Or a collections guy?
Yeah, for a little while, yes.
You were terrible, weren't you?
The worst. The worst.
I don't know how people can do that. I know that's their job, but you've proven, even though it was your job at the time, you couldn't do it because...
No matter what excuse they gave me, if someone couldn't make a payment, it was for cars, I would say, okay, well, we'll try again next month. And then it was explained to me, that's not how we make money, by telling people, okay. And I go, I feel bad for these people. They can't make their payments. You know, they're trying their best.
How
I was the worst that ever was at that.
How in the world did you even think you could do that
I don't
job?
Know.
That is so not you.
No, I know. I know. In Kansas, the weirdest job is dog food taster. Oh, doesn't that sound good? Since dogs can't tell us what they think about their food, humans are needed to make sure that nothing is amiss before pet food is shipped to stores. Kansas, one of the largest producers of pet food in the country, employs many of these dog food tasters.
That is ridiculous. Listen, it would be great if I could give Kona of dog food that tasted like steak.
Right.
Right now he eats this salmon a la veg, and I know it smells like salmon, but I'm sure as heck not going to taste it.
Right.
And I don't think anybody else did either. Why would you?
Right.
Who cares what it tastes like to us?
Because they're selling a myth. You know, if you watch a commercial for dog food, it's steak and chicken and things, and you go, I'm sure it doesn't taste that much like steak or chicken. But seriously, wouldn't cat food taster be worse than dog food taster?
No, if you like tuna, it would all taste like tuna.
Oh.
That's why I can't eat tuna anymore. I had a cat, Declan, for several years, many years, and all of his cat food, I don't care if it was chicken, beef, or turkey, it all smelled like canned tuna fish.
Yeah, I bet. I bet.
Ugh. And being Catholic and having that stupid tuna fish casserole every Friday during Lent. I can't.
From Ralston Purina? Is that who put that out?
He was our neighbor.
Yeah, no. All right, we will take a quick break. Oh, more than a break, we're going to the stream.
Oh, that's right.
Come join us on the stream. It's a lot of fun on the stream. It's the bonus hour on the stream. Or stick around and listen to Steve. We'll tell you more about that next. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
And Jen DeSalvo from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom right here at WGN Radio.